Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Second podcast of Monday, as we call it, Two Pod Monday, but it's usually just one pod. Matt Moore, how's it going?
It's going good. Good weekend. It finally got warm here in Colorado, which is amazing. I'm wearing shorts and it's 80 and it's amazing. So it's pretty amazing. And game one was fun, even though it was dominated by the Pacers. It was still fun. I imagine things are less fun for you, considering your feelings on the Kevin Love matter. I know you talked to Dan about it. Do you want to give me like your ethos, your thesis statement on where you're at with the whole Love thing?
Yes, I have a few points. One, this really isn't that hard to me because Kevin Garnett was much harder, right? Like, I was much more invested in Kevin Garnett. He's a much better player, and they made the playoffs with him, right? So this isn't ideal. This Kevin Love stuff isn't ideal, but it's not like devastating to me. Like, it's I guess I'm just kind of at a point with this whole thing, and covering the league definitely helps because it kind of lessens stuff, as you know Zach Lowe's talked about before. But it's like, I don't know, if they like he leaves and then they just start over. So like, I'm at peace with whatever happens. I don't expect them to get a good deal out of it. I have my ideas on what I think would be an acceptable deal, but you know what? Like, that's how often do you get really good value in this situation? Like, it's just not that often, and I don't know that I have a lot of confidence in the ownership / management to pull it off. But whatever. Two, I'm not getting invested in it because I'm not interested in negotiating with people on Twitter. Where it becomes like, well, would you take this? And I give my opinion of, no, I wouldn't. And then it's like, why wouldn't you do this? Like, you and I are not discussing a trade. Like, we're not going to make this trade happen. Right. So, like, that's the thing. Like, someone asked me about Phoenix, and I said, if I were the Timberwolves, I would absolutely not consider it unless you get Eric Bledsoe in return. Right. I said, they can part with him. That's the good young asset to get. I said, that would be a must-have for me. And then some people have been like, that's crazy. It's like, okay, but you can't ask me my opinion and then say, like, no, this is how it has to be. Like, you're telling me what I would do in the situation. I'm telling you, like, that's just what it is. So I don't like negotiating through Twitter when you and I have absolutely no chance of figuring out what the deal is. Like, I think any deal with the Warriors is a horrific idea because I don't want David Lee through 2016 for 15 a year. That sounds bad to me. And it's like the idea of like, oh, well, they can remain competitive now. Cool. How about they just blow it up and start over again?
Yeah.
You know, like, you're not going to get closer than what you are now by moving Kevin Love. So you might as well get smart about it, right? And then any deal that in which he has to leave, I hope Kevin Martin leaves as well because I don't want that contract anymore. Yeah, those are my thoughts. What are your thoughts on it? You're more unbiased.
There's a rare instance. I think that they have more leverage than people are giving them credit for because they've known this was a possibility. And I'm actually a little bit comforted by the fact that they have gone past the point of what I consider to be a very dangerous denial, almost like climate change, of
sure.
I don't know what you're talking about. Of course we're not going to trade Kevin Love. Everything's going to be fine. Well, no. And I did like the fact that they talked to Taylor at the Lynx game, and he was like, we're not going to do anything before the draft, which was basically, yes, I am in this situation once again.
Right.
So I'm glad that they face reality and they're going to deal with it. A key here, and everyone's like, well, they don't have any leverage because he's going to leave. Well, they have some leverage because there are about 6 big market, high value, high asset teams that all want him and need him right now because they see a window and have to capitalize on it. And they're all wanting to get him before he hits free agency. The Lakers are the one would love to get him before free agency, but they know at least, well, if he hits the market, we got him. We're just trying to make sure he doesn't get locked up before then.
Right.
Meanwhile, you have teams like the Warriors, the Suns, and the Bulls. And I understand. Like, I'm with you on your thoughts on those on the two that we talked about in terms of those aren't great options, but that drives the price up. And the real key is they've got now essentially 9 months before the trade deadline to find someone to get desperate and crazy and stupid over this. And GMs, when they see a star in front of them and a chance to win a title, which locks them up in job security for another 10 years, they will get desperate. They yes. will get really desperate.
Yes.
So the Bulls are a little bit different, and that's the sad part because they have the best package of deals, which we'll talk about in a second, but because the owner is like, no, we'll do anything to win. Pay the luxury tax? Well, you know, I mean, if we have to. But there's a lot of other teams. I personally don't really understand why I get the Phoenix is like, we want to win now, and we're really exciting, and look at our fun team, and look at us go. And I get people that want to well actually me and be like, well, actually, Phoenix is the sixth largest market. No one cares. In an NBA market, they are non-existent. Right. They're not non-existent. They're not Charlotte, but they are down a bracket.
Yeah, they're not Charlotte, but they're not Golden State. They're not Chicago.
Yeah, there's honestly, it's like there's New York, LA, Chicago, and then there's a tier below it that's Miami, Golden State, and a few others.
Right. Like Toronto's a huge market, but like, nobody wants to go there.
Like Houston's, I think, is in that second tier now. Houston was in the bracket below it. The Suns are in that bracket right below that one. I agree with you on the Bledsoe deal, which I think that kind of scuttles it because, one, Bledsoe would have to agree to it, and I don't think Bledsoe wants to go to Minnesota to go to a rebuilding program when he just came off of all the success. And if you're the Wolves, this is very key, and this drives me crazy with people. If you're the Wolves, are you really going to be like, oh yeah, I'll definitely take this really talented player who's coming up on a long-term extension who's definitely not going to want to play here. That sounds fun. No. No. I don't want guys that don't want to be here. I want guys that want to be here, which is why you want rookies, because they're too stupid to know better.
Exactly.
I was talking about this morning. I think, and I think that the team should absolutely bowl over. Like, I think the Wolves should set the bar extremely high. Like, the Wolves should be like, I want money off my books. I want multiple draft picks. I want, if you have a young prospect that you're willing to give up, sure, throw that in. We'll take that too. But I want cap space, and I want the ability to, and I want multiple draft picks. Those are the two things that I want.
Yeah.
And I want value pieces as what's around it. So when I started looking at the Bulls, I was like, well, they could send the rights to Mirotić, and even if you're like, well, Mirotić won't come over. Well, he'll come over eventually because he's going to want to get paid.
Right.
You send Mirotić both of their picks in the first round, which people say those aren't lottery picks. That's true. But if you take two lottery picks and then you put Kevin Martin with it, I will guarantee you some team will be stupid enough to take that.
Yeah.
Like, there are teams that are looking to trade out of this – to trade down in this draft. I know that sounds crazy. I know of two – breaking, I actually have sources. I know two teams that for a fact are looking to trade. They are looking to trade down for long-term veteran talent.
Right.
And then the Bulls could send either Jimmy Butler, and then some people say Taj Gibson. It's kind of up in the air. I'm cool if you want to try and get Taj Gibson. I don't really want it because it's money on it for 28-year-olds, and I don't know what Gibson's going to do outside of Tibbs' system. I'd rather have Butler because even though he can't shoot, at least he's a role player. And if you put him and Corey Brewer together, you have like 0.75 of an NBA player. So
sure.
I think you've got
– I think the draw of Gibson is you can flip him to a contender.
Right. So I think there's value there. I'm not blown away by anything the Celtics have. I get the idea.
I don't understand what they have outside of Rondo, who obviously doesn't make any sense here.
I get – the idea, well, the big thing is, well, if they win the lottery, they'll give you the number one.
Yeah, and that would be the centerpiece, right?
I don't really get why. I will say this: if you're facing a rebuilding plan, suffer the first year. Look what the Magic did. Like, suffer the first year, and then focus on that second year to start going. That's why I said actually with the Bulls trade, they should take Boozer because one, there's a chance that Rubio, Boozer, Pekovic, Brewer, Martin. If they're not able to move Martin, which they should, but if they're not able to, there's a chance that team could put together one of those weird, they're just pretty good seasons, and then all of a sudden you make the playoffs, and you don't do anything because of that. But it's fun. It gives Glenn Taylor some satisfaction of not being in the lottery again. It gives the fans at least a fun year.
May I interject real quick?
Yeah.
Unless three teams just decide to leave the league in the West, there's no way that team makes the playoffs.
Well, I mean, the Suns were right there, right? Like, the Suns were right there, and they had a shot at it. And Memphis could be imploding, apparently.
Right, we'll get to that in a little bit.
So I'm just saying, it gives you – I would rather focus on clearing money for the 2015 summer, and everyone says, but it's Minnesota, people won't sign there. No, but you're just trying to clear space that you have options. You can take on money and trade. You can try and get value guys. It keeps your long-term options open. And I get – if you look, if you get a top three pick in this draft, that's obviously great. Like, it's terrific. I just – I worry about trying to kind of shoehorn in a rebuild immediately, especially because you're – it's going to take you a year to clear out everybody, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, but in this draft, like, yeah. That's the thing. It's yeah. This draft. So then you kind of have to do it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Do they have to move Pekovic? Do you keep him?
I would move – I mean, I love him. I really love him. I think he's really good. But if Love's not here, I don't really get the point.
Yeah. Like, I think you are in the same place, which is like, if Love's gone, you move everybody and you keep Rubio as long as nobody comes through with like a crazy-ass offer.
Right, yeah. As long as nobody's maxing out Rubio, then right. I think you just try to rebuild, maintain, and then hit your stride when Rubio is up after that first extension.
Right.
Assuming he gets better to the point where like you're like, oh, he's got to be around, you know?
Can you believe David Kahn's still screwing this team? Can you just...
I said that to Dan. I said once Love leaves and once they give that pick to Phoenix that they owe them, that will be the official end of the David Kahn era. So that'll be fun.
Man.
But that was the thing. And that was the thing I wrote at the time of the extension. Where there's all that drama about he wanted this and David Kahn like went into the weight room and handed him the contract and stuff, you know, like completely like insulted him, would tried to like overpower him in the negotiations, all this crap, all the stuff that David Kahn tries to do. And at that time he agreed to the 3 years or the 4 years with the opt out after three. And I wrote at the time, like, okay, now you have a clock. Like, you have to get good in this amount of time. And they didn't. And that was like that's the risk of Glenn Taylor trusting people he shouldn't trust.
Yeah, and it sucks too because you do feel like they had such a good shot this year. Like, they just should have been better.
Yeah, they should have been. They had a great shot. They had a roster good enough to make the playoffs for the first time since 2004-2005. That was a roster good enough to make the playoffs, and they didn't. And that was your shot, and you didn't get it, and now you pay for it, right?
I'm interested to see what he does here in terms of which teams he ascends to. Because we're back in the, well, he wants to win. Well, everyone says that, but why are the Lakers always on this list? This has been on this list for him for really, what, 5 years? Like, it's been mentioned that he would love to play for the Lakers for 5 years. They've made that known. You know, you can't tell me I want to win and go to the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't care if Kobe Bryant's still there. I don't care.
Well, I floated this idea. He gets traded somewhere. He waives his opt-out, right? So he becomes a free agent in 2016. The Durant-Love combo in 2016 as a package deal. L.A. would be in position.
That's true. I remain skeptical. I'll tell you, I remain really skeptical that Kevin Durant's going to turn out like it. Like, I'm as skeptical of NBA players as anybody.
I completely agree. I'm just saying, they're friends. They like each other. Most friends like each other. They could be free agents at the same time. Like, if things don't work out for either of them, you never know. That's the whole point. Not that, oh, this would happen.
Somebody was floating to me the idea of him going to OKC. Like, couldn't you construct some sort of deal there? And I'm like, you could, but I think if you're OKC, you gotta look at it. This is the same place I am with Houston. That's what really annoys me about the Houston. Like, we gotta stop with this Houston nonsense. I get that Morey wants a third star. I get that they're aggressive and trying to build toward a championship, but if one more person says, what do you think about Parsons, Ashik, and Lin? I'm going to throw something. Yeah, tell you what. Give me $30 million in poison pill contracts and Chandler Parsons, who I'm going to have to overpay because of how good he is, even though his value rapidly depreciates if he's not surrounded by two other stars.
Yeah, I mean, I would – like Parsons would have to be part of the deal. And then it would have to be like Monte Yunus and – probably and Terrence Jones, although that sounds like a lot, and a pick, right? Maybe multiple picks.
Yeah, I think you need – they have their 2014, right?
That sounds right. Yeah.
Like, you need – I would ask for their 2014, lottery-protected 2016, top five protected 2017, top two protected 2018. Like, that's –
yeah.
That's where I would go.
Yeah.
Like, I would be like, I would. You'd have to give me a ton of long term assets if I'm the Rockets. I don't want any part of a shaken Lin. And yeah, and then on the other side of it, I've been screaming about this. Why would you do this if you're Houston? Why would you look at your playoff run and go, well, you know, we had 109 offensive efficiency, and our big problem was that we gave up 111. And we can't stop anyone on the perimeter, and that's plain to see. I know. Let's go get Kevin Love.
You know what's better than 109 offensive efficiency?
125.
209.
Right. No, and I get the idea, but I'm also from a I like playing the whole fantasy GM and like hyper excited. Like I like getting excited about things, but there's that part of me that the basketball pragmatist that's like, guys, you can only score so many points.
Right.
I know Swaggy P is going to listen to that and just like keel over, but like you can only score so many points.
I
really can't.
Speaking of Swaggy, I couldn't be enjoying his social media life any more than I am. He posted a video. Well, he posted a video about how God gave him the nickname Swaggy P, which is phenomenal. But he posted a video of him like at a like a 24-hour gym or something like that playing basketball. Literally took a 360 three-pointer. Like, he pump fakes, the guy, like, jumps by him, and then he just spins into a three-point shot, and he hit it. And I just, like, I couldn't have been happier.
It's crazy that Jamal Crawford is such, like, a grounded individual, and Swaggy's like, that guy? It's weird, because, like, Crawford really seems like a really grounded human.
Yeah, he's, like, a really nice, humble guy at this point in his life. Like, yeah.
So, basically, Memphis is imploding.
Something's going on. I mean, so Lash got canned, right?
Yeah. Mark Stein, ESPN, reports that Stu Lash got dismissed. And the way I'm reading it is, as a result, Jason Levien's going to resign. And if that happens, there's no way to know what's going to happen with John Hollinger or Coach Yeager.
That's an overhaul.
I don't know if it sounded like they said clashing with ownership.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is just simply a matter of an owner being like, why do we go backwards? We made the Western Conference Finals last year. Why do we go backwards? I'm hoping it's not, because he seems like a really smart guy, but then there's lots of smart guys in this league that get to be owners and just do stupid stuff.
It is kind of funny because like in business, you're always moving forward, right?
Right.
Like, that's the mindset. But then you would think, like, there would be perspective there. But, I'm guessing if you're such a successful business person that you can afford to own an NBA franchise, that's probably not something that's easy to turn off.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, here's what it's like. It's like, we had a record year in earnings. What happened the next year? Well, we had a near record year in earnings. Oh, well, now we got to fire everyone.
Right, then you have layoffs.
Like, it's not like the stock has dropped. This isn't like Apple in the late 90s. Like, what are you talking – like, why? Why would you – you know, if it's personal conflict, I've talked about this a lot. Personalities are what matter, and this stuff happens. That happened with Mark Jackson. They've done a pretty good job setting this team up for a future in the last 2 years. They've done a really good job in managing all of the conditions.
Right.
And I'm – you know, you're a little late in the game – to go after somebody else. You can't go after SVG anymore. That's off the table.
Right.
Oh, God, if they hire Mark Jackson.
I was just going to ask.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Why? I can't. Him being back on the broadcast this weekend was not – it was one, it was awkward, and two, it was unpleasant. He sounded very depressed on the broadcast.
Yeah, like, well, it was also awkward that – they talked about that. Like, I thought that was unnecessary. I mean, I don't even think you have to address it.
I think you have to address it, and I think it's – well, no. Now that I think about it, you're right. You don't have to address it. I thought it was weird, though, because it was like JVG and Bream were like, it's great to have you back, buddy. Hey, the band's back together. And Mark Jackson's like, yay.
And he's like, yeah, this isn't an awkward situation at all.
And well, he's like, I shouldn't have been fired. Like,
he gave his resume.
He did give his resume.
That was fun.
Oh, God, if they hire Mark Jackson, I'm not going to...
That would kind of fit, though.
It would. It's a great fit. He fits really well with the city. He fits really well with the city.
And,
I'm not sure.
I mean, assuming they keep that team together, he fits that team. Like, he would get those guys motivated.
Tough defensive attitude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I would think it would be unlikely that they're going to give Jaeger the new deal and then can him, but they might wait a year.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is a pretty – they've got cap flexibility, long-term assets, lots of options of what they can do in the summer. But this is dangerous now, right, where if they have this massive capitulation of the front office – and they have to make decisions on Zach Randolph, Mike Miller, and Ed Davis. And you have to do that in a span. You have to hire a new guy to come in, get a feeling for that situation, and then manage negotiations. And the Grizzlies are gonna. I'll tell you what, the team's gonna be pissed.
Yeah.
Not that they loved the new management group, because I don't think that they did, but they don't want, like, they're like, We went to the Western Conference Finals. We've won 50 games back-to-back years. We're a playoff team. We took Oklahoma City to 7. Why is there so much instability here? It just looks bad on the organization.
Oof. Yeah, that's a tough situation, just because there was so much momentum. And then, like, whether you agree with it or not, like, I get the change they made, you know, and I don't think it was a bad idea, but You can't just change and then keep changing because of whatever reason. Like, there does have to be continuity within the organization.
Ernie Grunfeld's gonna outlast Jason Levien.
That's weird.
Randy Whitman's has already outlasted a lot. He's gonna outlast two Grizzlies coaches.
That's also weird.
Ugh, this is not optimal. Not optimal at all.
Speaking of optimal, those Indiana Pacers.
I have no idea. The further I get away from game one, the less I know of how to react to it.
I think it was something where, I don't know, they shot really well, and they shot a ton of free throws, and Miami didn't attack the basket. And part of that stuff is game plan, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, they executed the game plan, and it worked, but it just feels like Miami left a lot. Like, left a lot to be desired there. And I don't know how much of that is execution. I don't know how much of that is game plan. I don't know how much of that is personnel, but there was something missing, and so it's hard for me to say one way or the other. Like, I think the thing to take away from it is Indiana looks like what they were supposed to be.
Yeah.
And maybe that's all you get out of that game, and that's enough.
A fun game I've been playing lately is on radio stations, when they ask me, are the Pacers back? I say, imagine a world in which the NBA season, there was a time jump, and it ended on January 31st.
Oh, this is perfect, because I just finished Lost last night.
There you go. What'd you think?
I liked it. I liked the ending, too.
Wow, good for you. I liked it, too.
Yeah, I think it helped because I watched it. I, like, binge-watched it.
Right.
And so, like, everything was fresh. Nothing was confusing. Like, I just got it. I thought it was good. I thought it was really solid. Okay, keep going with your.
So January 31st, and it time jumps to game one to game two of the Eastern Conference semifinals. Everything makes sense. You're like, oh, okay. Like, even the Wizards, even them getting trounced in game five by the Wizards, you're like, eh, they didn't have it that night. It's fine. No big deal. Like, everything else looks exactly like the Pacers. They look exactly like what they were supposed to. It's weird because their offensive explosion is – on one hand, I keep wanting to be like, you know how in every series there's that one game that's just like – it's just weird. Just a weird game. Just didn't – and it can follow the same pattern, but it just doesn't necessarily fit with the two teams' profiles. I lean towards that, but then I also remember – Indiana did this last year, where we were like, well, their offense, they're not going to be able to score. And then they scored really well in the Eastern Conference semifinals and finals.
Right.
So I don't know how legit that offensive performance from Indiana was. They created great shots with ball movement. Hibbert actually opened up a lot just by being active. It forced the defense to collapse. West's interior passing was terrific. His decision-making was awesome. Paul George was making shots, which is huge. George Hill, who you and I talked about, made shots. And Lance Stephenson was cooking.
Yeah, Lance's passing was fantastic. I'll have a thing on that tomorrow. His passing was fantastic. What did you think out of what we saw from LeBron and what we saw from Wade? I don't really care about what we saw from Bosch because I think he just missed shots. But what did you think? Like, did you think Wade had a good game? Did you think LeBron had a good game? Because their numbers are nice.
I wrote about this actually yesterday. And I did a big. It was great because I had people that yelled because I said LeBron didn't play well. He wasn't nearly aggressive enough on either end. And people responded with 25, 10, 5. And I said, okay.
Right, he can get that in his sleep. Like,
please go read the post because I actually provided video evidence. And the video clips I pulled, LeBron was slow to rotate. He looked confused about where he needed to be. And Paul George just beat him on cuts. Yeah. Just beat him.
I thought LeBron was really bad on defense.
Yeah, he just got beat. And offensively, take away the four-point play in the fourth quarter, right? And which was his only bucket in the fourth. And he had 21 points through three quarters and no buckets in the fourth if you take away that four-point play.
Yeah.
Like, that's – and especially the idea is, well, their defense was what killed them. That's absolutely true. The Heat can still win any game that's a shootout. They should win any game that's a shootout versus the Pacers, at least. Versus the Spurs is another matter. They need to grind it down versus the Spurs. But versus the Pacers, they should win every game that's a shootout. Their offense wasn't good enough because James wasn't effective. And they had a 104 offensive efficiency. They could have been up at 111, I think, if James had taken over a little bit more. Wade, I felt like, had opportunities. He saw he did. He had the mid-range jumper going. I don't mind his shot selection because that's what he's like. The key with the mid-range jumper, there's actually, it's funny we talk about it, well, if you're really good at the mid-range jumper, take it. Wade's actually an even extension of that, where it's like, well, if you're good at the mid-range jumper, you should take it. Also, if you're horrible at threes, it's probably better if you take the mid-range jumper.
Right, exactly.
So I thought Wade was really good. I also thought he was pretty good at both ends. He gave Stevenson, he put up good contest. Stevenson just made tough shots and used his athleticism, and I felt like offensively, he was in rhythm, and he wasn't ever – I didn't feel like he wasn't calling for the ball and going one-on-one too much. Stuff just wasn't happening for them outside of him.
Yes, I agree with that. I thought it was just a – it didn't feel like team basketball to me with Miami.
I will say Chris Bosh is going to have to play better defense. He has to play good defense on either Roy Hibbert or David West. It's fine if he does it, if he struggles with Henderson size. It's fine if he struggles with Hibbert size, rather. It's fine if he struggles with West's skill. But he can't struggle against both of them. And West got him up in the air yesterday on a couple plays.
It's, yeah, like, he did.
You just can't do that. Like, that can't be. You've got there. If your team is going to go with a small ball strategy, you're going to have to make them pay by playing decent defense inside and knocking down those threes. Like, the threes you can't really control. Like, you make them or you miss them. But defensively, he's got to be better.
I agree with that. And I do think that, just the whole team seemed undisciplined in the way they were playing defense. Like, it felt like the turnovers they got were kind of just basic ones. Like, I just didn't think they forced a lot of uncomfortable situations for Indiana.
You know what, actually, now that I think about it, you know what it makes me think that they were trying to adjust from Brooklyn, who was like, we're going to walk the ball up, we're going to go through motion by motion by motion over and over and over again, and this is going to be slow and painful and all of this. And then the Pacers were like, well, no, like, we can play good defense on you, but we execute. Like, we actually know how to run an offense. We can't shoot usually, but if we're hitting, you're screwed. And that really seemed to catch the Heat off guard a little bit. The Pacers did a good job of setting the pace of that game because they were getting into sets quicker and more efficiently than they usually do, and that was big.
Yeah, that was big.
You and I podcasted about 30 minutes before the Ibaka news broke on Friday.
Oh.
Well, we said we didn't know who to pick. I guess we do now.
Yep. I feel very good about my Spurs. My Spurs pick. I wouldn't say in seven anymore.
Not so much, no.
But I'll at least get the winner right. I worked for about 3.5 hours on this Ibaka breakdown defensively of how he changes San Antonio. And right before I was about to hit publish, the Ibaka news broke. I went, well, this is useless. So I changed it into something that wasn't very good. But it's everything in that series, because the athletic advantage that we talk about with OKC, it's not just Durant and Westbrook. It's Ibaka defensively. And Ibaka made the Spurs shoot about 20% worse at the or in the restricted area this year than they normally did against anybody else, which is just incredible. I mean, he affected that team so much. He took away their ability to get points inside, which sets up everything else.
I don't think that it's weird, because it's like, if losing Durant would be worse and losing Westbrook would be worse, but it's just like, you can't lose Ibaka.
Nah, you can't lose him at all.
Like, he's their rim protector. He's the guy that kills him with the mid-range shot. He's the guy that spreads the floor for him. He's the guy that gets the tip-back dunks. He's the guy whose athleticism matters on the interior. There's so many things in this series specifically that he needed to do, and just not having him, although Tony Parker and Kawhi Leonard are not convinced.
I thought that was funny, just the reactions of it. The reactions to that stuff is like, I don't know if they were kidding. I don't know if they're serious. Like, maybe it's like it seems like too crazy to be true kind of thing. You know, like, I don't know what the context was. I only read the quotes. But it that brought out some vitriol on both sides.
I was just like, I just imagine them with like all sorts of conspiracy theories. Like Tony Parker, like wandering through, and like, they say there is a man on the moon, but really, you know, the Serge Ibaka truthers, that's the Spurs. Sucks. This is gonna be a great series. I just feel like they're gonna win games 1 and 2, and it's gonna be, can Scott Brooks make the tactical adjustments in game 3, and everyone listening is going to go, ha ha ha. Well, he did it last time, but he had Serge Ibaka.
Right. I feel like his game plans are actually pretty good.
He makes really good tactical adjustments throughout the series. That's why they get better. If you look back at the history of the Thunder, they always get better from game 3 on, because once he has something to work with, he's really good about making tactical adjustments.
Right.
He may not make rotation adjustments. He makes really good tactical adjustments.
Yeah, I agree with that.
One thing on Heat Pacers, should Battier was +2, Haslam was -8. It's single game, small sample, blah blah blah. Should they go small next game, or should they start Haslam?
I don't mind starting out small, but if Shane Battier is not taking and making shots, like, he looked hesitant to me throughout a lot of that game. So if he's not taking and making shots, I would switch up to Haslam quickly, and I would go heavy with that throughout the rest of the game, because like if Battier is out there and he's hitting shots, that really throws the Pacers off.
If Bosch comes out and is murdering offensively in game 2, then I can keep him in. I would almost go the same route that the Hawks, or that the Pacers went with versus the Hawks, where they had the quick leash on Hibbert.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, it's because Hibbert's broken inside. Well, it's also because you can't keep him out there because of the 5 out.
Right.
I would want to go to a Haslam, Battier, James rotation as often as possible.
Yes.
I think that works pretty well. The big issue I think that they're having is that Battier is 6 weeks from retiring. Like, he can see the end, right?
Right.
And there's going to be a part of him that's like, I don't want to get my ass kicked by David West anymore. Like, I just don't want this to happen. So I wonder how – and James really struggled with it, with West. So I don't know.
It looked like he just looked uncomfortable defending West when it wasn't in the post. Like, all the pick-and-pop stuff, like, he just looked like he wasn't sure of where to be, which is weird, because I feel like he hasn't been like that in a long time.
Yeah, I wonder – I don't know. It's weird to think. I will say this. We've seen this from LeBron enough. If you perplex him a little bit with what you're doing, he takes a long time to want to figure it out, and that's not that he's slow. He's actually extremely intelligent from a basketball sense.
Yes.
But he wants to solve you. Like, this is what the Spurs did to him last year, where they ran that hybrid man zone, and he was like, okay, well, do I pass? Should I shoot? What should I do? Like, he tries to figure out what the best course of action is, and it takes him a little bit while to be like, I should just go because I'm stronger and faster than everyone. Like, it takes him a little bit while to figure that out. I think the Pacers did that to him a little bit on defense.
Yeah,
because like their rotations, the Pacers were basically trap us, please trap us. Like, we know you want to do it, come get it. Come on.
They were ready to move the ball.
Yeah, and it was actually a really great adjustment by Vogel because it was basically. We know that this is your tendency, and we're going to specifically punish you not only by moving the ball quickly, but by spacing ourselves to put you in impossible situations if you trap.
Yeah.
If you don't trap, this will be fine. If you trap, you're going to be in big trouble.
And they just make great, quick decisions, which was the key to that. Because it was as long as you survive that initial trap, which was easy to do as long as you're making a quick decision, it was just murder from there.
Yeah. Like, Hibbert was getting wide open stuff at the rim.
Yeah.
You know? West was getting wide open stuff at the rim. And that's it's rare for the Heat, even though they don't have a rim protector. Usually they've got guys there ready to make a foul or make a play to contest, and they just really struggled with that. So we both like the Spurs. The line's 5.5. I took the Spurs.
Yeah, I would take the Spurs on that.
The over-under is 209. I took the over.
Ooh, I might go – no, yeah, you're right. They're going to have to turn it into, like, an offensive series.
I just can't see, without Ibaka, them keeping the Spurs under 110.
Yeah.
You know? It's such a bummer. It's just, you know?
It took a lot out of it. It really took a lot out of it. Like, I still think it'll be a relatively competitive series, and who knows? Maybe OKC goes crazy. I don't know. But it just, like, that news was deflating.
Yeah. Like, to the point where I, like, immediately started shifting all my attention towards drafted free agency stuff. I was like, well, I had all these ideas. I was like, oh, I can write about this or that. And I was like, and it's weird because when you do analysis, like, these other things still matter, but it's just the Ibaka thing trumps everything.
It does, yeah.
Have you seen Godzilla?
No, I didn't get a chance.
What?
I know. I failed. What? I failed. Didn't get a chance.
Ugh.
We will get to that this week, though.
Okay.
Promise you that.
Okay. So you liked Lost.
I liked Lost a lot, yeah.
Maybe binge watching makes the characters less infuriating too, because they're I went through periods of hating Kate, Jack, and Sawyer at different parts.
Yeah, I didn't mind Sawyer so much in the series. I hated Jack. Like, after about like 5 episodes, I was like, I just want Jack to die. Like, I couldn't stand it. Like, I hated his personality. I just thought he was awful.
Kate... Did you know he was supposed to?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, the original pilot had it written that Jack was going to die in the first episode.
Oh, that would have been nice.
And they rewrote it after they tested it with audiences, and everyone loved him. So.
Huh. Yeah, everyone loves the doctor.
Big mistake, audience.
Huge mistake. That's why you don't listen to focus groups.
I mean, I liked him as an archetype. He just... I don't like it when characters do things where you realize that eventually they would be like, well, no, this is clearly not what I should do.
Right. I didn't like Kate. I loved, like, obviously, like, Mr. Echo was my favorite, but spoiler alert, he doesn't last that long. I loved Locke. Like, I just thought the Locke character, especially as it progresses later in the series to something different, like, I thought that was fantastic. I love Saeed. I love Jin and Sun. Who else do I love? Oh, I love Linus. Like, Linus was great.
Yeah, Linus was really great. Yeah. I like Juliet, actually.
Yeah, she's great.
When I started out, I hated her. But after a while, I got to where I was like, I really like her. And, like, you want her and Sawyer to end up together. I got pissed that I actually think that they killed off too many people in that show. Like,
yeah, I mean, they did a good job of, like, finding ways to keep them around.
Right.
But yeah, I agree with that.
Like, Echo, I think, was because the guy had a pilot, so that's fine.
Sure.
But, like, Jin and Sun, come on! Like, no, there's no reason to do that to them. Like, Charlie didn't have to die!
I was happy that the weird half-sister, stepsister, I was glad she went.
Yeah.
She was awful. I don't know how I feel about Hurley.
Really?
Yeah. I like him and I hate him at the same time.
I loved Hurley. I think he was fantastic. And I loved him in his guest spot on How I Met Your Mother as well. It was terrific.
Congratulations to How I Met Your Mother, by the way.
For what?
For the great series.
It really was a great series. I haven't watched the finale. I picked it up in the second season was when I started watching it, and I've watched every single episode within 4 hours of it airing. I very rarely even DVR'd it. I usually watch it live. And I haven't watched the finale because it got spoiled for me online when I was at a game.
Oh.
And based off of what happened, I'm like, and this is, it's not like a rage thing. It's just, you know what? I'm happier without it. Like, yeah. I'm okay.
Yeah,
like,
you're good the way you are.
I could walk off with the penultimate episode being the last one. That's fine. That's
sure,
cool.
Sure.
I need to get caught up on Elementary. What else am I watching? There's a bunch of stuff I want to try. I want to try that Revolutionary War Traitor show on AMC, I guess it is.
I don't know what that is at all.
Yeah, it's like a Revolutionary War thing.
Oh, okay.
And then I don't understand why I can't watch Justified. Like, why can I not stream Justified 2014?
Can't find it anywhere.
From the pilot. Like, I want to catch up on the thing. I don't want to just jump in.
Yeah. No, I would love to catch up on it, but yeah, you can't really find it.
Have you watched Amy Schumer's show on Comedy Central?
I've seen it here and there.
Oh my God. It's amazing.
It's my type of humor.
She opened up one episode with one of those like PSA pleas for you to adopt animals. Yeah. Only it was, I've adopted too many animals. Like, I have a serious problem. It was incredible. What else? Are you gonna see the X-Men movie? I bet not.
I'll wait till it's on TV.
I probably will too, which is my, like, 14-year-old me is like slapping me without yeah. wrong.
Like, what was that, the like X-Men, the new class or something like that?
First class, yeah.
Oh, Saved by the Bell, new class. X-Men First Class, like, I'd never had a desire to see it in the theater, but I caught it on a movie channel, and now I'll, like, watch it if it's on. Like, it was solid enough, like, I enjoyed it.
X-Men 3 ruined me on the franchise for a while.
Yeah,
so.
That's really bad.
Like, much like Spider-Man, where I actually haven't seen Amazing Spider-Man yet, because Spider-Man 3 was so bad. I think what else is coming out?
I like the new Spider-Man series. I've seen them both, and I enjoyed it. Like, they're not great, but I think for comic book movies, they're really solid.
I saw the trailer for Interstellar, which is in front of Godzilla.
How's that?
It's what's his face? Christopher Nolan, the director.
Oh yeah.
With Matthew McConaughey as apparently there's a huge fuel or food crisis, and so mankind has to go find somewhere else to live, and of course, in doing so, they're going to put Matthew McConaughey in charge of this process.
I'm in. That's all you had to say. I don't even have to see the trailer. I'm in.
I'm just excited because it's kind of a Contact throwback, which Contact's one of my favorite movies ever.
I watched Two for the Money the other day.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Which one is that?
McConaughey is like a gambling expert, like an up and coming gambling expert, and like Al Pacino is his. Is his like mentor who like hires him on, and it's like very shady. It's old too. I think it's like 8 or 9 years old. It's everything wrong about McConaughey and Pacino movies in a spectacular way.
Wow.
Like, this is not like, this is in between where them having their sweet spots. And it's just like, for that, it's really enjoyable.
What happened to Pacino and what happened to De Niro? This is my question.
I don't know, but I so badly want a remake, and you can do it with makeup and make it work. I want a remake of Scarface with today's Al Pacino playing the same character.
What?
I think that would be hilarious. I want today's Al Pacino being Tony Montana.
That's a crazy ass idea. That's like we're gonna do Taxi Driver with.
Oh my! I've actually just started watching that. I'm like an hour into it, but I just started watching. I've never seen Taxi Driver before. That's a creepy movie.
That is a creepy movie.
Yeah.
I watched 3 hours of Godzilla films before I went to see the new one. I watched King of All Monsters. I watched the first Mechagodzilla film and one of the Mothra ones.
I've got Godzilla versus Space Godzilla on the DVR.
Nice.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
There's one scene in Godzilla that I'm dying to complain to you about. It's just like it's stuck in my brain whenever I start. Whenever I think of the movie, that's what I think of, which is sad because there's a lot that I like about the film. But there's one thing that's just driving me crazy, and I can't get over it.
I've heard a lot of it was good, but it wasn't Pacific Rim good, which is something I really didn't expect to hear.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people are going to feel that way. I liked it better than Pacific Rim, in large part, and this will, again, discussion for Monday, but or for whenever you see it, but the monsters in Pacific Rim were so big, there was no scale to them.
Yeah.
That was one of my issues.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They were so big, I couldn't, and that, I'm writing about this for fanside.com, that about how the thing that we like about monster movies and destruction movies is like the conceptual destruction that's involved about being in that situation, about like the logistics also. Like you and I talked about this, like how much would it cost to rebuild the city?
Right.
And you can't really do that. The monsters are so massive. There's no real, you can't understand it on the scale of interacting with people.
That was the one thing I liked about Pacific Rim though, is how like cities just went on about their business with like giant rib cages in the middle of the city now.
Right.
Like the cave monster. Like that was like a cool twist to it of like, no, we couldn't clean all this up. Where are we going to put this? So we're just going to build around it.
No, yeah. I just opened a new falafel stand. Where? Oh, it's by the giant monster rib cage.
Yeah.
Over 4th and 15th.
It's over on Northwest Pelvis.
Right. That should be the name of this podcast. All right. Game one tonight. Game, we'll have to talk tomorrow or later this week.
For sure.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Zach.